Welcome to Winning Is Not Everything, where we bring sanity back to youth sports by focusing on character development, effort, and sportsmanship, not rankings and trophies. I'm your host, Sean Jensen, former NFL reporter, children's book author, and youth sports coach. Jerry Rice, Randy Moss, Chris Carter, Warren Moon, Terrell Owens, Andre Risen, Donald Driver, Jerome Bettis, Randall Cunningham, Dez Bryant, Dante Culpepper. What do all these superstars who played for so many different NFL teams have in common? Stick around to find out. Team Snap is the presenting sponsor of the Winning Is Not Everything podcast. The spring sports season is just around the corner. Are you ready? Whether you're a coach running your team with the Team Snap app, an admin using Team Snap for business to manage your club or league, or a marketer looking to make noise in the youth sports space, Team Snap has got you covered. Visit teamsnap.com or download the Team Snap app from your app store for more information. If you're a coach, no matter the level, someone will give you unsolicited input on an athlete. Because one instinct humans cannot seem to pass up is a chance to judge others. That's one of the things I always admired about Ray Sherman. He always saw the best in people, and everyone started with a clean slate with him. The list I read in the teaser? Yup, Ray Sherman coached all of them. And honestly, it was a key to him continuing as an NFL coach for so many years, not to mention how often those players had exceptional seasons under his leadership. But you know what I think is perhaps even more impressive? The list of players he helped improve so they could have long and meaningful careers, to players who were overlooked and made an impact anyways. Players like Bill Schrader, Donald Driver, Miles Austin, Drew Bennett, Rob Moore, and many more. In part two, we're going to dive into keys for his ability to evaluate players and his ability to connect with players. Let's get to it. That's one of the things I wanted to talk to you about is, as you mentioned, you coached some ridiculously talented players throughout your coaching career, but you also had an ability to draw out the best in your players. You know, Jerry Rice had one of his best seasons under you. Terrell Owens had one of his best seasons playing under you in Dallas. Andre Risen, who was a guy that a lot of people didn't feel could be coached, was somebody that was very productive under you. So the perception of these problem players, how are you consistently able to connect with them and get them to be a productive player for the teams that you coached on?
You know, Sean, I think the thing is I got to know them. Mm-hmm. I had them in my home. I had them around my family. I had them around my kids. I was always talking to them. I was always communicating to them, you know, and they appreciated that. I mean, I'm going to tell you this one. Brad Johnson, you know, the guy that was a coordinator said that he couldn't play. He couldn't play. And then he said, Ray, I want you, because he was in the World League. So I go to Atlanta and meet with him and watch him practice and watch him play. And I came out and said, he can play. All you need is somebody to believe in you and give you an opportunity. That's what coaching is. Sometimes these coaches, they formulate an opinion about a guy, oh, he can't do this and do that, and they don't know anything about him. You know, you got to get to know them. You got to know their heart. You got to know what they're all about. They wanted to cut down a driver in Green Bay. You know, and I told them, no, we ain't cutting down a driver. I said, Donald Driver just needs an opportunity to play. And look at him, one of the best players that ever played in Green Bay. You got to know him. You got to feel. They wanted to get rid of Miles Austin in Dallas. He just going to be a special teams player. I said, Miles Austin can play. He's talented. I worked him out. I said, he can play. He reminded me of Andre Reed that played at Buffalo. I said, the guy can play. All you got to do is give him the confidence to play. You know, you got to get inside guys' head and their hearts and understand them and bring it out of them. That was my job, to bring out the best of them. You know, Brad Johnson had one of his best years. And look at it, he's a Super Bowl champion. Warren Moon had one of his best years with me when I was there with him in Minnesota. You just got to know how to talk to guys. Just because, you know, they make a lot of money and they're these superstars. Them guys want to be coached. They want to be treated right. Wow. They want you to be fair with them. They want you to tell them the truth and don't sugarcoat it. If they're playing bad, you tell them, hey, man, you got to pick it up. Just like C.J. Stroud. Everybody's talking about, oh, he's not this, he's not that. do you guys look at this young man and look at the film and see how he plays? And you going to sit on and tell me, oh, he didn't pass this test. Look at the film. What does that tell you? He's playing against the best in the Big Ten. Look at it. And you guys going to tell me that he can't play or he's not smart enough. He's this and that. Or he's going to be a failure. Guys, you got to stop that. Sometimes, and see, the thing about it is, those people that make those statements, Sean, they don't have to worry about being fired from their job because all they're doing is just making a statement. That's why I always believe in what I see. That's why I don't get caught up in analytics and all that stuff, because I learned you go see them in person, you watch them and look at them, and then you make your evaluation. I don't look at a sheet and say, well, analytics says this. Analytics don't tell me nothing about his art. Analytics don't tell me about what he knows. You just see a bunch of stats. Was this late in the game when the game really didn't count?
Thinking about the young athletes and their families that listen to my podcast, what are some of those things that you would share with them? Some of those things that maybe weren't as public knowledge about those athletes that made them exceptional?
You know, Sean, the thing that I think about is if you make a mistake, you don't dwell on it. You know, I would say, you make me say, hey, you owe me one. Even if it happened in the game, guy drops the ball, hey, you owe me, you know? That's what I would say to them. I don't dwell on it because I know guys are not trying to fail. Everybody's going, hey, I make mistakes as a coach. And I'm big enough to say, hey, guys, that's on me. That's my fault. Even though it may not be my fault, I'll tell them, hey, that's on me. Put that one on me. It's not on you. And I always believe in that, taking care of those guys and protecting them. And I would say, well, maybe I could have coached him a little better. That's on me, coach. That's not on them. That's on me. Or maybe I could have did a drill a little differently to help them. Or if something happened, then I know what drill to use. And I would talk to them about it. You know, sometimes guys are down and, hey, come on. You got a long way to go. We got a long way. This is a long season. You're a great player. Just pick it up. Just work harder. You're going to be fine. And that was one of the things that I always learned. Just tell them, just keep working. It's going to happen. You watch. It's going to happen. And all of a sudden, you'll see what I'm talking about. But it was encouraging every day, giving them encouragement, talking about the good things that they do, talking about the time that they put in to get to this level. And, you know, and just don't be down on yourself. This is the other thing that happens. Sometimes guys have a situation, the wife could be sick, or you got kids that are going through a tough time. You have a death in your family, and you got to, when you know them well enough and they come and tell you, then you understand, okay. And I would tell the head coach, I say, coach, his mom is really sick, just so you know, because he may struggle today. Just so you know. When I was in Green Bay, at the end of the year, we lost Antonio Freeman to Philadelphia. We lost Bill Schrader to Detroit. We lost Corey Bradford to Houston, Texas. They all made more money. And so I had Donald Driver. Right. I had Javon Walker. I had Robert Ferguson. I had a bunch of young guys. And so the media, they were saying, these guys don't have no experience. They don't have the time, man. They don't, this kept harping on it. Mike Shirley came to me, Ray, you know, and saying this and that. I said, coach, I said, we got some talented players, and they're young, and they're smart. I said, coach, don't worry about it. I will have them ready. Because at the time, we had Brett Favre. Brett Favre. And so when you got the quarterback, all you got to do is make sure that these young guys are supposed to be where they're supposed to be and understand what they're supposed to do and prepare. And that's what I did. I prepared them. We went through everything. We studied. They understood. We look at film. We look at film together. We make whatever necessary adjustments we need to make. And you stay on top of that and you just let them play. You don't overburden them with a lot of stuff. You just talk to them and build that confidence up in them. And I always used to say, you guys are very talented. We got great talent in this room. Now, all you guys got to do is go display it on Sundays or Mondays, whenever we're going to play. That's what you guys have got to do. And they were all confident guys. Donald Driver's confidence went through the roof. Javon Walker's confidence went through the roof. He was a first-round pick. Robert Ferguson in the second round, his confidence went through the roof. Antonio Chandler, a young player we had. You know, those guys' confidence went through the roof. And that's because that's what we instilled in them. I instilled that in them. You know, don't worry about it. If you make a mistake, so what? Just get ready for the next play. and let's get ready to go. And that's what you do. You build all those things and you always stay on top of them. And I've been something, Shaw, that I call to keep it real. And what happened is I got guys to talk their life situations out. And what it was is you talk about life lessons. You talked about religion. And I had a 15-minute block where I could do that on a Thursday because we have, you know, a long meeting time. So I had to figure out things to do with them so you don't bore them. Okay. Mm-hmm. So I had what I call keep it real. They loved it because now the older guys would get up in front of the room one at a time. We might do one a day, you know, one a week or whatever. And they would talk about what they went through. Donald Driver talked about how he slept in a U-Haul and how he was homeless and how he went through this and that, you know, went through those things. Robert Ferguson talked about what he went through. Javon Walker talked about what he went through. And then when you have veteran guys in there, they talk about religion. They talked about finances. They talked about a lot of different things where guys might have gone through the same things. And so now guys can relate to one another and they understood one another.
Hey, Coach, I want to go back to something you had mentioned much earlier in the interview. You talked about your aspiration to be an NFL head coach. And, you know, I covered the league for almost 20 years, and you had several opportunities to interview for head coaching positions. And of course, we know that there's been so much attention on African-American coaches not getting maybe as many opportunities to be a head coach in the NFL. I mean, you look at the NBA, no one even talks about the race of coaches because there have been so many races of everything. Like there's now even coaches international that are coaching in the NBA and nobody talks about what's fair or not fair. Because the NBA's past that. The NFL still is not past that point. But how do you feel about that, that that was your stated aspiration to become an NFL head coach? You certainly succeeded at a high level. You were an offensive coordinator. You had head coaching opportunities. What went wrong to not have that opportunity come for you?
You know what, Sean? I got to say, I was bitter at one time. But then I got to the thinking, I said, you know, if God wanted me to be a head coach, I would have been a head coach. And the reason why I say that, Sean, because a lot of guys that I've coached with, they're no longer here. They're no longer here because of whatever it may be. It may be stress. It may be a sickness. It may be something that took them away from here, even assistants. And what I learned is there's some teams that are old school teams that are never, I don't think, ever going to have a black head coach. All right. I mean, that's just face the fact because they're old school. And then there's some teams that are doing it. And then this is my philosophy. This is what I believe. I felt there was always someone in there that probably didn't want to give you an opportunity. And, you know, I could live with that. I interviewed for two college jobs. One was SMU. I was at Minnesota. I was a quarterback coach at the Vikings at the time. And it was in 97, I think it was. And I didn't even apply for it. AD called me out of the blue and said, I want to talk to you about coming here to SMU to be the head coach. And so and at the time, we were getting ready for the playoffs, to play the Giants in the playoffs. And so he flew up to New York, you know, and I had some free time. He met with me and talked to me about the job. And I, I was kind of, I was focusing on the game and really wasn't into that. But then he said, you know what, Ray, I'm going to get you after the season because you will have more time to really do it. So I prepared. I was on top of it. I fly down to SMU, my wife and I, and then I met with the president. I met again with the athletic director. I met with the board members. I met with the faculty. I met with players. I met with everybody. And they all said that we want him as our head coach. There was a couple, a white couple, who donated $1 million plus a year. They didn't want a black coach. And the reason why I know that, because one of the board members called me and told me that they said, you did an outstanding job. We all wanted you. But they donated that money, and I guess they didn't want to lose that money for me coming there. And then this is where it's funny, because the woman had said, wow, he's so enthusiastic. Why would he want to leave where he is to come here? Now, Sean, if I didn't show enthusiasm, what would she have said? Oh, he wasn't enthusiastic. He didn't want this job. And then when you show enthusiasm, he's too enthusiastic. Why would he want this job? So it was a no-win situation.
Yeah.
The other job is at University of Georgia. Vince Dooley was the athletic director. Vince wanted me to have the job. There were people there that wanted me to have the job because I recruited there, I coached there, mm-hmm. I have a good name there. And what happened is when I met with the president, I gave him my information, I gave him my book that I had. You know what he says to me, Sean? Oh, you're pretty smart. I told my wife this. I said, I'm not getting this job. When a guy says that, I'm not getting the job. You don't say that to a person that you're thinking about hiring. Then he says, well, I hired the first black, blah, 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 blah. I don't want to hear that, who you I first hired. You know, I don't want to hear that. But that's the kind of stuff that you went through.
Why is it that you told me that you don't coach at camps anymore?
Because I got tired of the parents complaining. They complain more now than ever. My kid is the best. My kid, oh, how come he's not playing? Why is this? And they're arguing with coaches. And I don't need that. I don't need that. Shout out what I would do, individual stuff, one-on-one or something like that. But I'm not doing no group. I'm not doing that anymore because I see, you know, the way these kids act. Look at Cam Newton. He had that camp and they didn't want to fight. Come on. You're trying to help kids. You're not, you know, and you got guys upset or whatever. Well, he didn't do this and do that. And man, it's a pro. He played professional ball. He's an MVP. And you guys haven't done anything and you go to question his credentials. And that's what happens. Now, you got people that want to question your credentials about, you know, what you did. And it's just frustrating. And I didn't want to get in a situation where I get in an argument with a pair and then it gets physical. I'm not doing that. I don't want to do that. Now, if I see one kid or I see something the parent asks me to work on, I'll do that. But I'm not going to do them. I refuse because it's parents are crazy, Sean. They're crazy. You see it in basketball. You see it in all the sports. You see it in soccer. You just see it. They're just crazy.
Thank you so much for tuning into this episode of Winning is Not Everything. Please make sure to like the podcast and subscribe to the podcast so you can immediately get the latest episode. If you have any questions or comments, please visit my website, seankjensen.com, and go to the contact page. You can even leave me a voice recording. And of course, I want to thank my presenting sponsor, TeamSnap. Whether you're a coach, administrator, or brand looking to reach the youth sports community, TeamSnap connects the world of youth sports. Visit TeamSnap.com or download the TeamSnap app from your app store. Until next time, I'm Sean Jensen.